Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRC, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening is Matt the Minion. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, so it's actually not a tonight. It's more of an afternoon, and we're not really here right now. We're in San Francisco, well, when this airs.
It's like a crazy time you're trying to do here.
Yeah, this is like very meta of me.
It's Wednesday afternoon, but they will not listen to it on Wednesday afternoon.
Unless they're in Florida, they'll listen to it this Sunday. But if they're not in Florida, they'll... Anyway, I'm going to stop now. Yeah. Just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. We've got a really cool guest this evening, former Marine Paul Gardner. He's going to talk about an incident that occurred in 2003 in Iraq. And some of the lessons that he learned there and some of the takeaways that are going to be applicable for you and me and also current military, current law enforcement. Should be a really cool show. I'm going to get him on the line in just a minute. I would update you on the rifle and or test pistol, but since we're actually not airing this until 2 weeks from now, I don't know what's going to be going on then. I don't want to confuse anybody, so we're not going to do that. I will say we are doing a very cool project with Triple Watt Design, which is what brings us out to San Francisco in the first place. And I guess I can drop that now, even though I haven't announced it on the – I need to stop. This is like some sort of weird time travel.
You can just trip them out and be like, we're doing it right now, but we're not doing it right now.
Well, actually, we're done with it by now. It's the day after. It's the day after tomorrow's day. All right.
Anyways.
Yeah, let's stop. So we're going to get Paul on the line right about now, joining us this evening, Mr. Paul Gardner. Paul, how are you doing tonight?
Outstanding, brother. How about yourself?
Not too bad. And I guess I could say this afternoon, but we're going to try and go with the continuity thing and say tonight just because I'm in the habit of doing that. But
yeah, I'll take it.
So first of all, I really do appreciate you taking some time out of your week to join us and talk about things. For those that are not familiar with your background and have not heard your story, I guess let's just start at the beginning. Tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I joined the Marine Corps shortly after September 11th, 2001, as an 0311 rifleman in the infantry. I would actually go on to serve during the initial invasion of Iraq in 2003, during which I was severely wounded in a gunfight when I was shot in the chest and permanently paralyzed from the waist down. Shortly thereafter, after doing some rehab and everything, I was medically discharged from the Marines and would still be in and out of the hospital for a few years, taking my body a while to recover from those wounds.
Yeah.
And there was really a huge void in my life after getting out of the Corps. And I was looking for something to fill that void, and eventually in 2009, got back into shooting and training again, and not so much got back into it, because I was never really that much into shooting before the Marine Corps, but I was looking for something, I was looking for the Marine Corps again, basically, and once I got back into shooting and especially training again, I found my home.
Yeah.
And got back into the Marine Corps pretty much, and, I found my Marine self again, and my warrior self and mindset, and that's what I really needed at that time. And my first training class was with Jeff Gonzalez of Trident Concepts, who I think you've had on the show once or twice.
Yeah, we're buddies, I guess, at this point. So,
and in that first class, I thought I'd have fun and shoot some rounds downrange, of course, but I didn't think I'd learn very much since I was a Marine infantryman and knew everything there was to know about gunfighting, of course.
Right.
And I wound up learning just a ton of stuff over those 3 days, and as awesome as that was, at the same time, I was kind of angry because I realized that a lot of the stuff that I learned in that class that Jeff taught could have totally prevented me from essentially getting my ass handed to me in that gunfight back in 2003. And ultimately from being in a wheelchair today.
Right.
And because of that, you know, I felt the desire to share my experiences with others and help others so they wouldn't have to make those same mistakes that I did. And in 2010, I wrote a Lessons Learned article in SWAT magazine, thanks to Denny Hansen there giving me a chance, and about how I was wounded and mistakes that I made, and, you know, hopes to prevent other Marine soldiers and LEOs and good guys in general from making those same mistakes that I did if they ever found themselves in a gunfight someday. So,
right. Now, in something that I've really kind of found interesting about, you know, your story, and I've been aware we've not really started talking until pretty recently, but I've been aware of you and kind of what happened to you for a couple of years now. And one of the things that's been pretty impressive to me, and there's several, but the one that first stuck out in my mind was how willing you are to say, well, you know, hey, I messed up and here's what happened, and I just want to make sure that, you know, no one else does that in the future. We're going to talk.
Well, I mean, it wasn't until even then, you know, in 2009, you know, or 2010, when I first started talking about it, you know, it wasn't until really this past year when I actually finally outright admitted that, you know, I failed that day. You know, I failed and, you know, and I lost. And, you know, he won, at least temporarily anyways. He'd go on to, you know, die, you know, many times over. But,
right.
You know, I finally admitted that I lost, and that was not easy to do for, you know, for a Marine, of course, though. But
I don't think it's easy for anyone to do.
At
all. I mean, and my hat's off to you for multiple reasons, but I think that something that a lot of people miss out on is how important, you know, recognizing mistakes and or failures is to overcoming them in the future and also preventing other people from doing it. I mean, we're going to talk in a little bit more detail about that actual day and what happened in the next segment. We got about 2 minutes left before the commercial break, so I don't really want to start getting into the meat of it right now, just because I'd hate to have to cut you off. But just kind of for people that are listening to this first segment, to get them maybe interested in coming back after the commercial, what do you think the number one thing is that you've learned out of all of this?
Really, I mean, in that first class and in every class that falls, the main thing that you see, that the common thing that keeps popping up is weapon manipulation. Weapon manipulation, just basic stuff, just being able to run that thing and run it well. You know, even, you know, yeah, you have marksmanship, but just being able to run the gun itself and know, being able to diagnose things that go wrong with it if you have a malfunction, or when you need to reload, or the type a reload you need to do at a certain time. You know, those are very critical things and, you know, can really save your life.
Yeah. And do you think that's something that a lot of people overlook when they start talking about things like this? Is just how important the basic mechanics of weapons handling is?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, yeah, you have marksmanship and, you know, guys will start learning on the iron sights and everything, and, you know, they hit a target 100 yards downrange or 50 or even 200 or, you know, in my case, I was a double award expert marksman, you know, hitting targets at 500 yards, you know, and had my cool badge hanging down on my dress uniform, but that meant a damn thing. You know, it meant nothing
right.
when I was in combat, absolutely nothing, because I couldn't do basic weapon manipulations, you know, that we just did not learn at that time. So,
right.
Yeah, I think absolutely overlooked that.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit more. We're talking with Paul Gardner right now, and we got to go to break, but you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. Just a reminder, too, this segment brought to you by Walther and the new PPX. We were talking with Mr. Paul Gardner about his experiences in Iraq in the Marine Corps in 2003, specifically a gunfight that occurred one Sunday there and some of the lessons that he learned. Paul, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Perfect. I guess just start at the beginning on that day. What, you know, what was going on? What were you guys doing? And just sort of walk us through it, if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, essentially, like I said, you know, I participated in the invasion of Iraq with my unit, 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines. We're a bunch of infantrymen. And after we took Baghdad and Baghdad fell, you know, a day or two after you saw that statue fall on TV, my platoon found ourselves in the city of Al-Karamaya, which is a suburb of northwest Baghdad. We were in our AAVs, or amphibious assault vehicles, and we crossed over a pontoon bridge and stopped on the other side in a T-shaped intersection. Vehicles got in a tactical formation, and we went ahead and dismounted and held security there for about 15 minutes. All was well, and some guys were, you know, eating chow while the rest of us were holding security and stuff. We were kind of at 70% security, and all of a sudden we were ambushed by RPGs and small arms, and the ambush was initiated by rocket-propelled grenades being shot at our vehicles and exploding all around us, and then the small arms fire was aimed at us, of course, and we took cover and laid down suppressive fire in both directions because we were hit from both sides of the T-shaped intersection. I mean, it was a great ambush. Something that, you know, we would have done maybe from a few different angles, but it was a really good ambush, though, nonetheless.
Yeah.
And we weren't just fighting a bunch of idiots. These guys were, you know, Saddam loyalists and, you know, Fedayeen. They're hardcore dudes. And we begin our counterattack, lay down some cover fire at the general location, and guys started, you know, attacking that way. In the initial confusion, I was actually separated from my own squad that took off in the opposite direction, and I wound up linking up with another squad whose movements I had originally covered when they made movement, and I was covering with my M16. And me and my buddy linked up with them. You know, we kind of just followed the trail of bodies, honestly, and saw a house with about a million bullet holes in it and a hole blown in the side of it, and figured we were in the right spot. And we crossed before we crossed over into another house, at that original house with all the bullet holes in it, I saw the squad leader from that squad sitting down but on the porch with a 6-foot-long blood trail coming away from his upper thigh, and was like, man, this can't be good. Okay, this is, you know, for real now.
Yeah.
And, you know, you never expect for your own guys to get hit in this thing. And so I didn't really have time to diagnose the situation when another guy a team leader took over the squad and said, hey, Gardner, you're with us now, let's go. So I was like, roger that. We went over to another house across the street that bad guys were shooting at us from, and kind of worked ourselves into the backyard of that house. And I tried to breach a door on the side of the house. That is one of those stubborn steel Iraq doors that everyone who's been there knows what I'm talking about. I kicked the crap out of this thing over and over, and it just would not budge.
Mm-hmm.
So I was starting to feel, you know, pretty weak, and I was like, man, how can I get this thing open? So I was like, you know what, I'm going to take a frag grenade to that door handle, and I'm just going to pull the pin, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute, this is not already sounding like a really terrible idea.
It's like a good idea fairy moment.
Yeah, it would have, like, stuck to me, and I would have been like, oh, crap, you know, right after I pulled the pin. So I decided to go ahead and abandon that idea.
Yeah.
And by that time, though, the guys who cleared the house next door were in the second story and started busting out the windows and shooting at guys in the backyard of the house that I was at. And we're like, hey, you know, they're out of the house. They fled the house to the backyard. So we ran around to the backyard. And at that, by the time I got there, I already saw everyone shooting at this small one-room adobe hut, mud hut in the backyard, which I'll call a bunker from here on out just to keep it simple. But
yeah,
several of my guys had pinned some bad guys down inside of it and around it, and they were kind of, my guys were taking, three or four of them were taking all the good cover in the backyard, a tree and a house and a wall. So I decided I wanted to get my gun in the fight, and wasn't my squad either. So I wasn't, you know, with like my team or my squad. So I decided to go ahead and go around the corner of the house so I could get into a better position, flank the enemy so we could hit him from both sides. And as soon as I rounded that corner, I saw a bad guy. At this point, from how I'm faced, he would be at my 3 o'clock. And so I turned around and saw this guy, and he was low crawling away about 15 to 20 yards from me. He was low crawling with an AK-47 away from the bunker. And at that particular moment, nobody else could see him because of the layout of the structures and the angles that where everyone was. I was the only one that could see him at that particular moment. So, you know, I realized he was essentially doing the same thing that I was doing. And, you know, he was trying to get into a better position to kill us, you know, from. So I went ahead and at that moment put my front sight of my M16A2 service rifle on his torso. I was using iron sights at that time on my, you know, M16A2 with a carry handle.
Right.
And started pulling the trigger and, you know, engaged him. And it was the first time that I'd seen bullets rip into a human being at that range before. So, you know, I wasn't sure what it was going to be like. You know, I'd seen guys shot or blown up, you know, after the fact or from long distances, but seeing my own rounds rip into someone, and, you know, he was, every time I shot him, he just kind of flop around. Reminded me of a fish out of the water, just flopping around every time I shot him.
Yeah.
And I just kept pulling the trigger because of that. My adrenaline was pumping, and it's just wham, wham, wham. And the only reason I stopped firing, really, is because his buddy popped out of the doorway of that bunker behind him, which was just a little bit to my right, and started shooting wildly at me, only exposing half of his body and his head, and shooting at me with his AK-47. And I went ahead and just quickly oriented my M16 towards him and just fired 5 to 7 quick rounds at him, whack, 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 and caught him somewhere in the torso. You know, I'm not sure where, I just know it wasn't dead center because it whipped him around. And I just saw him jerk back violently and fall back into the doorway out of sight. So I assumed that I incapacitated or killed him at that point. And, you know, anyways, my bullets had locked to the rear on an empty magazine, so I needed to reload anyways. So as soon as I realized that, as soon as he fell back out of sight, and I was like, oh, I'm out of ammo, so I need to reload. So I shifted to my right about 10 feet to do a quick reload behind concealment,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought was going to be quick. And I got behind concealment, you know, instead of cover, because, you know, if anyone else came out of that bunker, they wouldn't be able to see me. But I wasn't behind hard cover since I was, you know, just going to do a quick reload, and get back in the fight and do what I originally intended to do anyways. And it felt like an eternity reloading my rifle. And, I mean, it truly was. I wound up doing basically just what I do in training, just what I always did, which was go ahead and point my weapon down at the deck, you know, at least a 45-degree angle, if not 60, and, you know, in a nice, safe manner, and pull the, you know, magazine out of the magwell, made sure I retained that precious empty magazine in my mag pouch, in my double mag pouch, which already had a magazine in it, so I had to rock it back and forth and jam it in there. Finally got it in, it sunk in, and I grabbed another mag and pulled it out, and I had to adjust it my hand, though, because it was faced rounds up, since, you know, I didn't know anything about feed lip creep with magazines at the time, but my feed lips were shot on that magazine, so rounds would kind of come out, so I could never keep my rounds facing down, you know, for the quickest reload. So
right.
I tried it before, it just didn't work.
Let me interrupt just real quick, because we only got about a minute left before we go to break, uh-huh. And then we'll get back into it. At this point, you've definitely killed the the one bad guy that was low crawling away from you, and you think you've incapacitated the other one that was in the doorway that popped out and started firing at you, right?
Absolutely, because I mean, you know, it's one shot, one kill is what I've, you know, been told since boot camp, and
right,
you know, on TV, you see, you know, guys shoot someone, they fall down, boom, they're dead. You don't have to deal with them again. So that's kind of the mentality I had. So of course, that's what I thought. You know, I did. I saw him fall down, so he must be incapacitated or dead even.
Right, and we'll talk about that a little bit in a second. But that was something that I just kind of wanted to illustrate for people, so that when we get back into this, they sort of understand where your mindset was. If it's all mm-hmm. right, if it's all right with you, I'm going to throw you on hold. We're talking with Paul Gardner right now. When we get back, we'll finish the rest of that story and then go from there. If that's all right with you, man.
Absolutely.
All right, perfect. You guys are listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. Makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for Sig parts and accessories. So, right now we are talking with Paul Gardner about incident that occurred in 2003 during the initial invasion of Iraq. Paul, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Perfect. So when we went to the break, you were just you had just engaged two enemy combatants, thought you had killed both of them, and you had popped behind some concealment and were performing a reload, correct?
Yeah.
All right. So if you could continue from there, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so once I got that other magazine out of my mag pouch and went ahead and inserted it in my mag well, my M16, sent the bolt home, regripped with my support hand on the handguard, and finally, after, you know, all this time, 10 or 12 seconds it took, which is a freaking eternity in combat when rounds are going down range both ways, I finally looked up and to get back in the fight. And when I looked up, I saw that bad guy who only moments before I shot and watched fall with my own eyes into the bunker out of sight and assumed that I, you know, incapacitated or maybe even killed him, was now standing outside of that building and was aiming right at me with his AK-47. And what had happened was, after I'd shot him, he had gotten back up, dusted himself off, and, you know, looked outside to where I was standing and saw that I was no longer standing there anymore. So he made his way outside of the doorway of the bunker, down the wall of the bunker outside, and looked and, you know, came to the corner of the bunker and saw me standing there doing my reload, you know, pointing my weapon down at the deck in my own little world, and took aim at me with his AK-47. So back, you know, to my perspective now, I start to, you know, I see him and I start to kind of raise my rifle up, my muzzle to shoot him and finish what I started. But, you know, I was reacting to him at this point. He'd gotten, you know, inside my OODA loop, and, you know, I'm trying to catch up, playing catch up now. So I'm already way behind the power curve here, and he's already way ahead of me. So I have about, it felt, you know, like an inch more to go before I could start cracking rounds off, you know, with my M16, and at that moment, though, it was too late. I saw a burst of rounds, or he got off a burst of rounds, and I saw a yellow muzzle flash from his AK-47, and just, boom, I was hit and saw nothing but darkness, and I came to, opened my eyes, and realized I'd been hit, and saw my M16 laying about 5 feet in front of me. We didn't wear slings at that time ever because our slings were just terrible. And, you know, not like the two-point slings that the Marine Corps has thankfully issued now, the Vickers, the VCAF sling by Blue Force Gear. And so when I had gotten shot, my body just collapsed like a sack of potatoes. My M16 just dropped muzzle down and flopped over end over end. So it was laying in front of me and realized I was hit. So I tried, you know, I figured I should crawl around the corner where I came from originally, around the house to safety so I could get patched up. But, you know, my body wouldn't work. I couldn't feel anything or couldn't move anything. And at first I thought maybe I was just being a scared coward or something, just, you know, so terrified that I couldn't move or something. And I realized, no, that's not it. Something is really wrong with my body. And what happened was, even though I'm paralyzed from the waist down, at that particular moment, my body was totally paralyzed from the neck down temporarily from spinal shock. It was just like a 10-minute thing, and then, you know, my feeling would eventually come back. But so it was kind of like Christopher Reeve's at that moment, you know, as quadriplegic temporarily. Yeah. So I really freaked me out there, and I could only move my head, and I kind of screamed for help. But my guys were thankfully doing what they were supposed to be doing at that moment, which was engaging the enemy. And we had been told that the best medicine on the battlefield is fire superiority, and they were doing just that, thankfully. So I looked at the guy who shot me, though, at this moment after I screamed for help. You know, I knew, okay, they heard me. And then looked back at that in that direction and saw that the guy who shot me was still engaging me at this point, cracking rounds off at me just like a madman. And, you know, I was paralyzed from the neck down, couldn't move anything except for my head. And I knew one of those rounds was going to honestly just drive right through my face into my head and blow my brains out of the back of my head on the wall behind me. I mean, it's crazy. I don't know why I thought about that at the time. You know, I guess because that's the only thing I can move or feel. I was just like, man, this is it. It's going to hurt. Even though I wouldn't have felt anything, you know, I was just thinking that's going to be nasty. It's going to hurt. So that kind of sent me into a panic. And, you know, I wound up passing out from shock. While I was passed out, it's possible that he did, you know, hit me, but most likely in the front sappy plate. While I was passed out, a fellow Marine shot one of the enemy's own RPGs that they kindly left behind for us when they fled the house in a hurry. He picked up one of their RPGs and shot it at the bunker, which quieted him down a good bit, needless to say. And during that lull, another Marine who is that Marine that was already wounded by a frag grenade. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
He made his way like 100 yards to, you know, despite his wounds, and assisted another Marine in dragging me out of harm's way. And it was, you know, one of the most heroic things that I'd ever got to see, because I was passed out still. And the enemy did what we would have done and began firing at all three of us, you know, which is fair in war, of course. Like I said, we would have done the same thing. But it essentially really pissed my guys off, and they unleashed hell at them, really. And they wound up quickly overwhelming that small building and killed the enemy fires inside and around it fairly quickly after that. And I woke up, or came to, a few minutes after that with like 8 jarheads staring down at me. And I was like, oh man, this can't be good.
Yeah.
And It turned out I'd been hit under the left armpit, and the bullet blew apart my spleen, which I had to later be removed, and also punctured my left lung and lacerated my stomach and left kidney and completely severed my spinal cord at the T12 level, and also blew out a chunk of my vertebrae behind me. So they didn't know about the exit wound the entire time. It took 45 minutes to medevac me, which is a story in and of itself. If we have time later, we'll talk about that. But they didn't know about the exit wound though the whole time, so I was bleeding out on my back the whole time. They didn't know, but they put QuikClot on the entry wound, which gave me a nice chemical burn and but helped keep me awake from the pain of it, because that was the first generation QuikClot, which kind of would do that.
Right.
But thankfully it doesn't anymore. So I was medevaced and, would come to be where I am now.
Right. I appreciate you telling the story. I can only imagine that it is not an easy one to relate. We've got...
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's definitely... It depends. I mean, sometimes I'm good to go, and sometimes I apologize.
No.
I get a little choked up at parts.
No, you don't need to apologize to me ever. I'm personally very thankful for you telling the story, and I'm sure everyone listening to this right now is as well. We've got about a minute left before the next break. When we get back, I'd like to ask you a little bit about, you know, what you think the biggest takeaways were just from a mechanic standpoint from what happened to you.
Absolutely. Mistakes and lessons learned, yes, sir.
Yeah, well, you know, and as much as you say you did things wrong, and, you know, that's a conversation we could have. I think you did a lot of things right.
Yeah.
And the fact that you were there in the first place says a lot about you, a lot more about you than it does for a lot of people that never even tried to go over. So, when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about that. And I'd also kind of like to hear about what you're doing these days as well. We're talking with Paul Gardner right now, and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by the Polypalooza 2 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country August 16th and 17th at the Raven Concealment Systems facility in Northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. For more information, click the Polypalooza 2 tab on ballisticradio.com. Registration is only $250, and all of the money is going to benefit the Paul Gomez Children's Trust. Remember, click the Polypalooza 2 tab on the ballisticradio.com homepage for more information, and save the date August 16th and 17th. So, we are talking with Paul Gardner about an incident that occurred in Iraq in 2003. Paul, are you still there?
Absolutely.
So we've already come to the last segment of the show because, like I told you before we got started with this, it goes pretty darn quick. I want to ask you about some of the lessons learned and what you know some of the changes that you've tried to help implement as far as when you've talked with people and sort of go from there. And then I kind of want to talk about your instructing now too, which I think is going to be interesting to some people. So I guess we'll just get started and go from there.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I kind of, you know, by now have, you know, everything, you know, in order and everything. I've told it, you know, so many times and the lessons learned from this. And, you know, really, if we kind of go back to when the second Fedayeen fighter, you know, popped out of the doorway and caught me off guard and started engaging me after I was, you know, till bad guy number one, we'll call him. The first thing is I didn't acquire, I failed to acquire my front sight on him. And, I just shifted fire over to him and started sending rounds at him and using what one particular instructor would call instinctive fire, which I call point shooting.
Right.
And wound up missing his vitals. And, I winged him. And, I know some will call that, combat effective hits or whatever, but I think it's either effective or it's not. Right. Whether it's combat effective or really effective or somewhat effective, I think it's just either effective or not. And this was ineffective. It winged him. So what? He fell down. He got back up and, he got the jump on me. So, and that leads to, assuming that I incapacitated or killed him instead of assuming the worst, which was that he could still be a threat to us. And really, you should always assume that, that he's a threat until you either see him die or give up with your own eyes.
Right.
If you don't see that or you don't have confirmation from someone else that they saw that, you need to assume, that the bad guy is still, alive and kicking and ready to engage you and shoot you in the face. So, that's kind of changed since then. We've been at war for a long time now, and guys are telling each other, all this stuff. So with that, people pretty much know by now, at least in the military. Law enforcement is a whole other story now here in stateside. But at least in the military, they know that it takes more than one round nowadays to kill someone, usually. The whole question of how many rounds does it take to kill someone or stop the threat, really, is, and the answer to that is however many it takes.
Right.
Everyone's different. So then, also performing such a slow reload. It's painful every time I think about it. It's just like, I just want to grit my teeth thinking about it. It's like nails on a chalkboard every time I think about it. Because, it took 10, 12 seconds for me to do that thing. And that's from the moment that I knew I needed to reload until the moment I got my gun back up and saw the bad guy.
Right.
We never went over that in training, unfortunately, at the time. They're a lot better about that now. But I never did speed reloads and attack reloads, combat reloads. Never knew what any of this stuff was. It's like it was, assume that you're just supposed to magically know somehow to reload your weapon. Your weapon once dry, what do? Well, you take that magazine out, stick another one in, idiot. But it's not that simple. And that leads to retaining the magazine, that empty magazine. It's an empty magazine. It means nothing. We weren't in a moment or at a time where I needed every last magazine like that. I could have lost one and been okay. I had seven of them.
Yeah.
I should have just let that mag drop out on the deck and gotten back into it. Just left it. If it was so important, I could have come back after all the threats were neutralized and picked it up. So, looking down at the weapon instead of downrange at the target was, the reason I was looking down at the weapon and, instead of up was because my weapon was pointed down at the deck instead of being up in my workspace, as, any instructor, reputable instructor anyways, will tell you to do.
Right.
These days, having the weapon up in your workspace, pointing kind of up at a roughly 45-degree angle, and that way you can, if your head's up, your eyes are going to be up. That's just how it is. Science, as some people call. So your head's going to be up, your eyes are going to be up, you're able to look down range. So if a threat is maneuvering in on you, you can, book it somewhere else because you can actually see him do that. Not, you just don't look at anything until right before you insert that magazine. Quick look, insert, bolt home and go.
Right.
So, and that, kind of leads to also standing still, and this is, since I wrote that article, things have, kind of changed up in other classes, but standing still, when I look up and I saw that guy aiming in at me, I'm already behind power curve, but I didn't know anything about moving off line of attack. If I would have just taken a good side step right or left or two big side steps, and as I'm making that side step, you know, start to bring my muzzle up and then engage as soon as I stop, or even start shooting on the move. I just reloaded, so I had 28 rounds to use. So I could have done that, or even the worst case, just immediately drop down into maybe, you know, Monica's, you know, Pat Rogers called it. So, you know, just something to make him react to me at that moment instead of me only reacting to him.
Right.
And, of course, finally would be standing bladed in that good old Marine Corps marksmanship stance, exposing a crossbody shot. You know, that's why I got shot under the left armpit, is because, you know, I exposed that area between my front and rear sappy plate, instead of keeping my torso and sappy plates facing a threat when, you know, when it all, you're not going to be able to do that all the time, but if you know it's a threat, you know, ideally, if you could, just kind of, you know, think of yourself as a Spartan with that shield. You don't want to be standing sideways, you know, with the shield pointing sideways. It's not doing you any good.
Right.
Point that shield, be a warrior, be a Spartan, point it towards the enemy, and it's going to do the most good. So,
yeah.
So that's pretty much, you know, like I said, I've been to all these classes, like 40 or so classes over the past 5 years, and out of all that, you know, those are the really, you know, that's kind of where it counts. Those are the things that really, I think, could have made the most difference at the time, other than just like tiny little things here and there.
Right.
So.
Well, and I will point out something, and I'm sure you've already thought of this, but, you know, as much as you say that there's lessons to be learned and mistakes were made and all that, and, you know, that's terminology there, I suppose. I will point out that you're here today, you know, getting to do stuff, and that guy's not, so, you know, obviously.
Absolutely. When it came down to it, I won, he lost.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We got a couple minutes left. You know, thanks again for coming on and talking about all of this, and I really hope that it'll help a lot of people. Now, you're instructing now too, aren't you?
Absolutely. This August, next month, as a matter of fact, I'll actually be instructing a class with Will Petty, who's a Fort Worth area police officer and firearms instructor as well. And we'll be instructing a low-light vehicle CQB class, the same one that Will and Steve Fisher just instructed last month there in Alliance. And we're going to be instructing it August 23rd and 24th in Grandview, Texas. And if guys are interested here in the Texas area or elsewhere, they can go to specopsystems.com to sign up for that. And it's only $300 as well for 2 days, which is an insane price. For that, an insanely low price for that. I mean, 2 days of shooting in and around cars, through cars, and I mean, it's pretty awesome stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. And it's certainly some skills to practice just with how often people spend their daily lives around vehicles. Man, I appreciate it so much. I appreciate what you did, and I appreciate what you've been through, and I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate your service to the country and, you know, you're the reason why we're allowed to do what we can do.
Yeah, so.
If I could say one last thing.
Yeah.
You know, with the guys that are coming back wounded and everything, you know, you didn't let the enemy defeat you over there, so don't ever let them defeat you here. So
yeah.
Live your life, adapt and overcome, and don't ever lose that warrior mindset or lifestyle.
Perfect. Man, thanks again. Next week, I'm not quite sure, but remember, you can listen to us next Sunday, 7 p.m., and check out facebook.com/ballisticradio and ballisticradio.com for past episodes. Be safe. See you next Sunday.